How is the U.S. changing under the Trump administration in the short run and the long run? It's a pretty big question to chew on in just a few minutes, but let's take a couple of bites now as we look at the news and a couple of issues. Joining us for this are Boston College historian Heather Cox Richardson and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Suskind. They host our weekly WBUR Politics and History podcast, Freak Out and Carry On. Heather and Ron, thanks for coming in. Good to see you.
Great to be here.
Let's start with the key Donald Trump speech this week at the United Nations. The president stunned a lot of diplomats and non-diplomats alike with his blunt language and talking about North Korea and its troubling missile testing and development program. He called the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un the rocket man on a suicide mission and pointedly said, "If the United States is forced to defend itself, our allies will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea." So here's the question I hear people asking on the streets, and Ron, I want to start with you. Is Trump leading us to war, or are we closer to war?
There's no doubt that his rhetoric is something that the whole world is trying to understand. Is this an indicator that we are moving more toward a moment of action? What does this do, in fact, to a leader like Kim Jong-un, where Trump, with each one of these angry expressions, backs Kim into a corner further and further, where he cannot have maneuvering room, because saving face is important in geopolitics, and Trump is making it harder and harder for him to act in any way that he might save face other than confrontation?
Heather?
Well, I think Ron makes a very good point that what Donald Trump is really up to in this is dominance politics. And he does this every time he's in trouble personally, he fights back. Of course, the night before he gave that speech, we discovered that there had been a FISA court tapping Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman's phones. And we probably have Donald Trump and members of his current administration on tape saying things that they probably don't want to have be public. But what I looked at when I saw that speech was that there is, of course, the international side of it, but there's also the domestic side. When Donald Trump is in trouble, he goes to his base. And by going to the base with the language that worked during the campaign, the stupid nickname for an opponent like Rocket Man.
In this case, Rocket Man.
Right. That worked for him before. But more importantly, he picked up on a long tradition on the right of loathing American internationalism.
Well, let me ask a specific question about that. Those who applauded Mr. Trump after this speech said the president pretty clearly laid out that during his administration, America will be nationalist, America first, but not isolationist. And Trump arguably got to that point by asking these questions during the speech.
Do we love our nations enough to protect their sovereignty and to take ownership of their futures? Do we revere them enough to defend their interests, preserve their cultures, and ensure a peaceful world for their citizens?
Where does this address put us in terms of our own policies and our standing on the international stage?
Well, look, what Trump is talking about is sovereignty. And sovereignty gets us into all sorts of trouble. It's right next to nationalism. We see it in Brexit. We see it in the United States. We see this rise of this sort of cult of sovereignty to say we are going to act in our own narrow interests as a nation and not think about what that might mean for the nations next door to us. And that is where we have drifted into and we have tried to avoid for all of my adult life.
What Ron is pointing out is that we changed that policy. We changed it with the rise of Dwight Eisenhower when he took the office. A Republican, and he was pushing back against the isolationism of that Republican wing at the time. We almost became an isolationist country, and we turned against it in 1953. But now we're relitigating it, and we've got a president who's saying, hey, I like the idea of going back to the way the world was in 1918. And the problem with that is that turned out to be not such a great thing in the 1940s.
All right, let's shift gears and talk about the Federal Environmental Protection Agency under the Trump administration. Critics say it's less transparent, less concerned about climate change, as partially evidenced by Mr. Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt speaking before the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, earlier this year.
Process, rule of law, and cooperative federalism, that's going to be the heart of how we do business at the EPA. The future ain't what it used to be at the EPA.
Heather, what's most changed? What's most troubling?
What fascinates me about this moment is this is actually a Republican program. It's Nixon who puts the EPA in place. It's, of course, Teddy Roosevelt who starts the environmental movement. It's actually Ulysses Grant in 1872 who creates the first national park. The idea of being a conservative and conserving our environment was inherently a Republican platform. And the fact that you now have a president who has put in charge of the EPA a man who has vowed to destroy it is an indication, I think, that we are rejecting that whole idea that the government should be actively be protecting America's water, air, equality of opportunity, and social welfare.
Well, look, the EPA started under Richard Nixon, is now more about politics than science. That's the change that's occurred. It's about who gets what in terms of giveaways, largely from the EPA. You know, one of the lines they use, we don't want to be picking winners. Well, of course you want to pick a winner if there's an industry that's causing terrific social costs in America in terms of pollution.
Aren't Trump supporters getting exactly what they wanted, a smaller EPA?
Well, there's a difference between getting what you asked for and getting what you wanted. The reality is that Americans have asked for that, but they still like an activist government that provides clean water and clean air and perhaps now health care and education and roads and bridges.
Thanks to both of you for coming in and speaking with us. We appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Journalist Ron Suskind of Harvard and Boston College historian Heather Cox Richardson, the hosts of WBUR's weekly politics and history podcast, Freak Out and Carry On.